So has anybody any questions?
I'm interested in this idea of waste and efficient resources. Obviously I'm talking about economic efficiency of waste rather than waste that we throw out, etc. The profit motive encourages people not only to seek progress and replace man by machine, an increased profit drive progress to increase profit. And I'm wondering sort of what would drive a socialist state to progress. So I'm wondering whether that concept actually doesn't matter in a socialist state. I'm wondering whether efficiency of resource utilization and allocation is indeed something that a socialist state would be worried about at all. The correct resource allocation to satisfy the needs of the people, I think, is the issue, rather than the efficient use. I'm just trying to get my mind around those concepts. Sorry, I haven't articulated myself very well. But.
Well, obviously, socialist society will have to be concerned to a certain extent. We don't want to waste resources unnecessarily. Mm. But what I was trying to argue was that if you had a system, like you've just said, a production directly to meet people's needs, it wouldn't be the same pressures as there are under capitalism to produce things as cheaply or as economically as possible. And yes, I mean, in fact, we would, in a socialist society, we'd be in complete control of production. We could decide what methods to use and so on. So, under capitalism, there's only one thing, and that is to keep costs down, so that and that's enforced by, by competition. So it's a sort of race to the, race to the bottom, isn't it? They've got to cut corners and think. I mean, that's the enormous pressure which is exerted on production units under capitalism. That wouldn't exist in a socialist society. But we could come back to the point that resources, much more resources, will be available to socialist society. We'll be a society of relative abundance, if you like, or enough for everybody. So we won't have to do that anyway. I mean, it's not as if we're living in conditions of scarcity. So social society can afford to take into account the health and safety of people at work and the environment and so on, even if it would use up more resources and more labour than doing the same thing under capitalism. You know, quite apart from other considerations of the waste of capitalism, which will be removed. I mean, not just the waste of armaments and armies and wars and destruction that's going on, but the whole waste involved in the commercial and financial system. In fact, most people here in this part of the world are doing a useless job from a social point of view.
Can I add that also capitalist society wouldn't like to produce goods that are long-lasting? If you do find something that's long-lasting, it's a bit of an exception rather than the rule. We're all familiar with having to buy several things, same thing time and time again. It doesn't last. It wears out, or it has a design fault or something. Because there's a lot of pressure on capitalism to keep selling. It wants people to consume. It wants you to throw things away. So when something reaches the end of its useful life, chuck it away and buy a new. But don't even want to repair it. That's also discouraged, isn't it? When you buy something, you tell them, absolutely, it's a pressure on people to buy, which is wasteful.
Very interesting.
Well, an interesting talk. I'm a bit concerned. I was feeling that the most efficient way of working out demand and what people in society was those invisible hands which make the decisions. So we're going to have a system which is better than the invisible hands.
Yeah, well, it will be a sort of invisible thing. I mean, towards the end, this other Austrian Baron von, von Hayek, he says that the consumer decides what is produced. We all decide what's produced by adding together all the various things that we buy, and this is what drives the capitalist system. It's a complete myth, of course, because there's inequality of income for a start and so on. But in a socialist society, you wouldn't need to have a visible hand to do this. You could still have what's decided to be produced, or consumer goods, talking about now, by what people take. And in the same system, you're going to the Tesco's or thing there, and you And you take off the shelves what you want. I suppose you could still have those barcodes on, and that would convey back to the producer. Yeah.
But fundamentally, doesn't the invisible hand, which is the most progressive system, because given a certain amount of money which is available to the consumer, they decide to buy A good rather than B good?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that's the signal for society to produce according to the invisible hands.
Well, yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying you can still have that invisible hand, that's not invisible hand in inverted commas, operating without money. We could, on the basis of what people actually take for
free.
How are
you going to do that? I'm going to get on a computer and just make choices on the computer.
Well, I don't know if we do that way. It just seems a bit just.
I'm interested in the concept. I'm just trying to be convinced that there's a better system than the invisible hands.
If all goods are free, imagine everything is free. Yeah. You can choose whatever you want. Yeah, and we all work.
Yeah.
How much we choose collectively determines how much is produced. So if you want to take two televisions or whatever, and I want to take one or six or whatever, then.
Yeah, well, my point would be, how do the consumers tell the producers what to produce? Now that the producers know what to produce, and just they tell them what the consumers.
Consumers are buying.
That's my point about the invisible hands. Once they're buying, there's a signal.
Why isn't there a signal when people take the same thing?
Okay.
I mean, the shelves of the I don't know how the system works in Sainsbury's or but I imagine that obviously part of the barcode is to do with the price of it. The other part will be how much is left on the shelves, and presumably that then is sent back to their suppliers, and their suppliers say, oh yes, they want more, so they order more from theirs, and eventually it goes back to what it's produced. I mean, that's a system that would work for deciding what consumer goods to produce, for deciding what schools and hospitals and roads and railways and things. You'd have to have a different method. That could be decided, you know, democratically by some elected body or something.
We've got another contribution here.
Sorry.
Yeah, presumably people talk to each other. There will be discussion about what is required, and we always agree that there would have to be administration, organisation of what's required, what's not required, different kind of needs. It doesn't mean that everything is going to stop at what people require under capitalism, but it'd be a different kind of needs, but without the push that's been mentioned towards sell more and outsell the next one, and this sort of manufacture of wants, so that there's this sort of super satisfaction that's obtained by acquiring material possessions, and it won't be the same kind of needs. But there'll be discussion and agreement about what. Taking resources into account about what will be needed and how things will be done, some decisions made locally, and I would sort of see circles of decision making sort of locally interlocking with a wider area to decide what to be made, and that mention of the improvements that are made within capitalism, but the improvements are sort of perverted within capitalism, so that this magic machine production that can churn out sort of enormous amounts of goods and an enormous amount of sort of plastic, what I would call rubbish. And I mean that in the terms of sort of gadgets and things that I don't mean that there aren't useful things made of plastic, but they're for the other things. But there's also the satisfaction that human beings need for actually creating things, actually making things, so that it may be that more things might, without sort of going back too far, but to a combination of things that people enjoy doing and making and putting more actual contact into, as well as obviously the really sort of what almost magical machinery and things that can be done, which obviously will be useful, but a mixture of things. But I come back to what I started with. There will be, you know, discussion and organisation and looking at the best ways to do things. Of course, making use of the sort of barcode kind of thing for some calculations. But a mixture of things, but arising out of how things are done now, rejecting what's not wanted and adding to what is wanted. But, you know, people making decisions about it.
Even Marx expelled anarchists from the First International due to not accepting central planning?
No. I mean, the anarchists, in fact, in the First International were even more central conspirators than Marx is supposed to be, because they believed in secret societies and secret... It wasn't a question of central planning. But I mean, there was an argument at the time. I mean, Marx, it's not quite what the word is, Marx didn't endorse, but he sort of mentioned the system of distribution by labour time vouchers. I mean, that's definitely was mentioned by Marx, but I don't think he was actually advocating that. That's what people at the time in the German Social Democratic movement saw as the solution. And there were anarchists who criticised, you know, that thing and were advocating what we were advocating, you know, free access.
I've got two things I'd like to ask. First, thank you for a very nice talk. I've got some of it, didn't quite get the rest. But firstly, I did hear from over here a socialist state when I froze, and I didn't hear anything of. No disrespect, but there is no such thing as a socialist
You're right,
state.
Actually,
I know Adam replied to you as a socialist society, but these things need to be made clear, particularly in this time, because so many people think we are here to be leaders and all this stuff. No such thing as a socialist state, and socialist society is what we are going for, the inclusion of all. Thank you for that. The other thing was, I'd like to hear a bit more about these two Nobel Peace Prizes. Having heard about Kissinger got the Nobel Peace Prize, so why did these two get it?
Well, it wasn't.
And how does this tie in with...
It wasn't the Nobel Peace Prize that he got. It's a Nobel Prize for Economics, which incidentally isn't a proper Nobel Prize. It wasn't established originally by Nobel. It's a prize given by the Bank of Sweden.
Oh, it's not there.
Well, it is. I mean, they call it a Nobel Prize, but it's not a proper Nobel Prize. But anyway, these two people got it. But as I say, 2012, there was an article in the Socialist Standard about it. One of them was concerned about how you allocate, I think it's dormitories for students in colleges. So you get the students to write down where they want to be or who they want to be with and so on, and then you put it in a system and you work it out. You know, I mean, it's a system of non-market allocation. It's a mathematical thing, basically. And I forgot what the other one was, but there'll be something in the Socialist Standard of 2012. But it's not really economics at all. I mean, some of the press commentary on it sort of said, "Oh, this is a something to do with the market." But it's nothing at all to do with the market. It's non-market. How do you allocate things in the absence of a market? I'd assume that by socialist state, you're right. You meant socialist state of affairs rather than socialist. Central state.
Socialist society.
Mind you, some of our members make that mistake as well. They did it on television. But he corrected himself straight away. Oh, socialist society.
You mentioned that you have to be able to equate skilled labour to unskilled labour. I'm just trying to get it right in my mind. Why do you have to be able to? Are we assuming that it's the profit motive that makes somebody want to be a consultant surgeon, or back specialist, or whatever it might be? Or are we assuming in our socialist society that people would want to achieve that because they have their own motivation internally, which I think must be the case for some of them? So I don't quite understand why you said it.
Well, no, I was criticising that idea. If you think you have labour time vouchers or labour time accounting instead of monetary accounting, you'd have to reduce skilled labour to units of unskilled labour. And I would say that's complete. I think that's unnecessary. I think it's impossible to do. I mean, how do you, you know, Marx says it happens, and it does happen. You know, be at the market. That's why some people get paid more than others, because it costs more to produce it and to maintain it. But I mean, why would you want to do that in a socialist society? It doesn't make sense. But I mean, the basic principle of socialist society is for me to according to their ability or capacity to reach according to their needs. So people, whatever job they're doing, however skilled or it is, that's what they contribute. But everybody, whatever job they do, is entitled to satisfy their needs. That business about skilled and unskilled labour is a technical point about how you would do. I mean, most people who pick up on what Marx wrote in 1875 assume you just measure by time. Well, you could do that. You could measure just by time, but it wouldn't mean anything in terms of efficient use of resources. You know, I mean, it's the.
But since the socialist society is not about the efficient use of resources,
it's not about the least costly use of resources. It's about an efficient system of in a different sense. No, I mean, this problem wouldn't arise in a socialist society.
Yeah,
I mean, I said if you were building a house, you would need to have various particular skills of. But you need a particular skill. You wouldn't. What would be the point of saying, a labourer's? Reduce it all to, say, you want 100 labourers. Well, you don't want 100 labourers. You want 5 plumbers, 5 roofers. It doesn't make sense.
And trying to envisage a future social society where robots come to the fore, so they can do lots of work that human beings may not want to, especially in production and things like that. In that type of society where there's no money, which the robots won't want anyway, how do the robots acquire self-esteem and self-actualisation under capitalism? Well, I mean, as people, men and women, we like to get our self-esteem through work or relationships, and our self-actualisation, as some pundits would say, through our work. So given the robots are just task-driven, apparently, right? How do they develop their self-actualisation and self-esteem?
That point hasn't been reached yet. There's these theory of people that think
it's called
the singularity. It's when artificial intelligence becomes more intelligent than human beings. Bill Martin goes. I don't think it's going to happen.
Shall I move my tongue from my cheek then and just carry on?
I know what you're doing. He's the devil's advocate.
Well,
sort of.
Good sense of humour.
But one reason I wanted to give this talk is that if you go on to discussion forums to talk about socialism, you're bound to meet some bore who will come up with the economic calculation argument. I mean, they're on these discussion forums about socialism and capitalism just as much as we are, and we need to deal with it. In fact, these people sort of ruled the roost in the 1980s when Thatcher and Reagan were there, and for various other reasons, because the governments wanted to denationalise things and introduce, I don't even like the term free market, unrestricted market, uncontrolled market. And these people were the sort of intellectual people that defended this sort of thing. And we were the only people, in fact, defending socialism as a non-market, non-money society. All the other people calling themselves socialists, oh yes, you're right, we there will be money in socialism and so on and so forth. So we sort of became the champions. In fact, one of their main people was an ex-party member, David Ramsey Steele, who wrote a book called From Marx to Mises, or From Mises to Marx or something. It's a thick red book. Half of it's an argument against us, because we were the only people that would take up their challenge to show how you could organise production and distribution without money in the market. I mean, they had a magazine called the Free Life, the Journal of the Libertarian Alliance. Robin Cox and me, we took them on. This is another one here. the libertarian student. So these are from the 1980s. This one, in fact, is by David Ramsey Steele. It's called The Titanium Bicycle. He's saying, why, if you're not going to take account of the economical use of resources, why don't you build a bike out of titanium? Is that the most rare metal or something? I suppose it's not going to happen, is it? It's a silly argument. But these are sort of arguments we had to have with these people in the 1980s, 1990s. But you still find them around, so we need to know so we can refute them.
Is anybody else who has spoken wants to speak? Or? So, okay, thank you.
Sorry. Is it Pat?
Yes.
Yeah, Pat, you mentioned something that made me think about needs and committees deciding on people's needs, and it sort of brought back memories of images I had of the Soviet USSR. And then I thought about use cases, particular cases like how would you deal with our socialist society, how would you deal with an artist who wanted to paint? You talked about creativity and our need for creativity, and you did as well, Kevin, our need for all of that aspect. How does socialism, or our socialism, allow for that?
Of course. Is it all right?
Yeah, if that's okay.
Well, creativity isn't just what you might call artistic creativity. The human need to do things can be all kinds of activity. I wasn't using creativity in that sort of artistic sense, though I would suggest that in socialist society there would be a great burgeoning, if you like, of people using their enthusiasm, talents, or whatever in all kinds of ways, and instead of there being a sort of artistic elite, it would be turned on its head, so that all kinds of people could develop their enthusiasms and produce things, or join in music, all sorts of things. If you think, just on the creative and the artistic sort of, I'll call it a kind of creativity. And then people do all sorts of things now belong to sort of amateur dramatics making things. There's been a sort of revival of knitting and these sort of craft sort of things that you can do that you get some satisfaction. But there's satisfaction in doing all sorts of things gardening, but on a wider sort of farming things that physically have to be done and made, and it may well be that we might prefer not to buy machinery and robots, however smart and nice the robots are to doing things, but people might enjoy doing things, but which it has to take into account that you can't produce what is needed by I'm not talking about going back to everything pinned up by hand. It's got to be a mixture, and maybe some things can be done like that, but in order to produce what's needed for everyone, certainly in initial stages, they'd have to, an increase of production to make sure that everyone has enough. And I think in our pamphlet from Socialism as a Practical Alternative, it envisages that after that first sort of time of having to produce a lot, the amount of actual production, in a sense, would level out, because you're not all the time looking for new things to sell. And, crikey, that's whatever it was, television or whatever it was that you had was perfectly all right. There's this new model, there's this new thing come out, and people make it feel unsatisfied with things. There wouldn't be the same, I think of it as being a sort of a whole life proposition, not just about making goods and people collecting goods. Right, it's all free now, so let's go and sort of crowd up, fill up the place we've got It can't be like that because the needs will be different. But that's that, you know, I consider the artistic creativity as slightly different, but there wouldn't be the same separation between what people, and if some people chose to be creative in that way, and that's their contribution to society, well, so be it. There would be room for people to do all kind of things or not do them. I mean, if Danny was here, he'd be telling you that, you know, everyone need only work 2 days a week, and I'm not sure about that. But, you know, because of the increase of available labour, because of all these things, I mean, I think it's about 40% of the people who come into London to work, and it's to do with the financial, banking, insurance, and what happened to do with that. So those sort of things wouldn't be happening. But I'm rambling on a bit now, so I'll stop and
Very interesting, thank you. Mm-hmm.
You want to think it?
Well, I mean, only to say that in conventional capitalist economics, labour is regarded as a cost, as something to be minimised. But in fact, I mean, okay, some labour is should be minimised, but it's, people want to work to a certain extent. So labour, I don't think work is going to be a problem because why would you need to minimise something that you enjoy doing? You might want to maximise or increase it. So in fact, we've got. I mean, there's been a big argument, as you suggested, in the socialist movement on this. Right, going right back, we published a pamphlet there by Paul Lafargue called The Right to be Lazy. Mm. We also published one by William Morris called Art, Labour and Socialism. But they're both putting two different points of view. Paul Lafargue would be, like you said, Danny would be, we'd only have to work for 2 hours a day, and then we'd be... It should be the right to leisure rather than the right to be lazy. Let me have the rest of the time as our leisure time. Whereas William Morris is saying, no, people will want to work. Even they might even work longer because they're enjoying it. And I think that in fact that the whole of modern economics is based on the idea that labour is a cost to be minimised, and it isn't necessary.
Said if work wasn't the one great thing in a man's life, he didn't see how he could perform the best that he was capable of.
Well, people need to work physiologically because that's why we consume energy to spend it.
I was thinking in a future socialist society, and there's I think quite a few people know there's this concept called lowbrow and highbrow literature and art and whatever. And so, for instance, watching the TV would be considered lowbrow. Going to theatre to watch a J.B. Priestley play or watch Dame Judi Dench, that would be good in a highbrow, classical music. I think under socialism, a lot of the distinction would go, because, as the lady said, all this, this bankers pushing around bits of paper and causing mayhem won't be there anymore. And I think people start to realise that the butcher, the baker and the candlestick maker are actually more of a good society than some of these literary people that are revered, because these people are actually putting food on the table, they're creating things to help life survive, I mean, art's got its place, but, let's live first.
I couldn't work out whether your tongue's in your cheek or not.
Well, a little bit, yeah. I don't like this notion of highbrow, as if, the people in the arts and theatre are going to it, and necessarily more superior than the people that actually produce food and heat and energy and all this. The necessaries of life, which are, in my view, more important than someone passing about on stage.
Especially the opera.
I like a bit of opera.
Okay.
Well, Oprah Winfrey.
Well, I'll see back sex.
In capitalism, people get, due to business, lots of income. On the contrary to what you said, they don't pay attention about the inventions. For example, scientists that do inventions don't get much money, while businesses benefit from it. For example, two singers and female stars, Harrison Ford and Michael Jackson, got $1 billion each during their lifetime, about $1 billion. But this scientist has got more than a few million. No scientist at all. The proprietary is not important in capitalism at all. this is the reverse of what you think. Business are not business,
not even under capitalism, people were. Well, as you say, inventors and scientists and people like that.
Did I say that it's been refuted?
I don't. I don't think you did say it, actually.
I don't know.
The difference between business and. I think you might suggest at one point that everybody acts under capitalism just out of self interest.
No, I wasn't saying that. I was saying I think profit motive does have an impact on how people behave.
Yeah.
Huge. But I didn't say everybody is acting only for a profit motive. I think there are plenty of people in society that do not act for a profit motive at all.
Well, that's what the point that Sherman is making.
Now, business people get uncomfortable, get other benefits. For example, other benefits and that business and cheats as well. In socialism, it is possible that scientists and artists and others, especially not only manual workers that do hard job, get more. Because there is a surplus that these people get, especially a small business. A small business is the return should be 2%, is 100%. What is this?
But I mean, I don't think
it employs half of the workforce of this country.
But I mean, under capitalism, I don't think that would happen in socialism. I mean, from each according to his ability, to each according to their needs. So if it can be a, you know, belly dancer or whatever you are, whatever job you're doing, you still have the same right as a human being to satisfy your needs. So I don't think you can make either case for people with special skills getting more in a socialist society. That doesn't make sense.
I just want to make a point. I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
Jack, no, you go first. Jack comes after you. Sorry, that's just
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I mean, people do useful work. I know you might say that plumbers, someone who's useful, but that plumber might go home for an evening and sort of paint. Yeah. Paint or go to an acting sort of thing. They're not separate things, aren't they? And also, we might not all always agree about what's valuable and what's not valuable, but they're not. They shouldn't be excluded. In case of minorities, in case of majorities, and minorities.
Well, it's obviously it's cheap to watch TV in an evening and go out to theatre. You try and go to one of them in London, it costs an absolute fortune.
But you can't.
That cuts people off from going if they wanted to.
There are theatres for £5 and a tenner. So I attended them myself, some of the best theatres in this area.
We'll go
with
one
more. West End.
Yeah, please.
Back to something. Okay. You know, we're going a bit forward into the nicer times of socialism. Where it's leisure, joy. I understand all that. I've already stocked up with my art, my violins, I've got two, I'm a gardener, all this stuff I was doing in capitalism. But the pleasure I'm looking forward to in socialism is wonderful. But before we get to the pleasure bit, there's all the work, the clearing up of the shite of capitalism, the damage that it's done to humans. You know, all of us, the mental illness, the distress, the despair and all that. Are we going to have the resources to do the clearing up? You know, human resources. Are people going to be able to understand that before you get to the pleasure and all the rest of it, you know, there's things that actually need to be done all over the world. Them sitting on the other side of the world or digging up coal or diamonds for the capitalists and all this nonsense may not want to continue mining. It is hard toil. It's not sitting in front of a computer, which, funny enough, is also toil. People don't realise 8 hours in front of a computer in the Western world. This is a madness, what they're doing. As soon as they come out of there, they're on the phone, stuck to it, walking up and down the street, on the run. They never take a rest from this technology stuff. When have they ever seen a blade of grass, a drop of rain? You know, I remember all this from my childhood. I'm looking forward to socialism, but there is so much work to clear up the mess and damage of capitalism that we need the resources that can deal with it. Because we are not going to be pleased thinking that we have allowed this nonsense to go on for so long.
I think we have got the resources.
You're going to need the abilities.
Well, you've got that as well. I mean, if they sent, a rocket up right out to Pluto.
So they say.
What do you mean? You don't believe it landed on the moon?
I don't believe all that nonsense.
Can I make a comment on your point?
Sorry. Okay.
Somebody else speaking with us.
I think there is an evolutionary path rather than, I think, what you're suggesting is a sort of revolutionary path to socialism. You're, I think you're suggesting that there's going to be a period of immense distress in between the two. I think there's an immense amount of work to wean people off the idea that of want, the next desire, dose, basically, of consumerism. I think that's a massive challenge. But I do think there's an evolution. I think the evolution can come from communalism, being a community, starting to do things for ourselves, and starting to set things up locally. I've never, ever been involved, and I'm sure a lot of people around here have been involved in. I'm embarrassed to say I've never been involved in that sort of community activity, but I would love to now, and I see that as the way that we can change people and change society. Everybody, in other words.
I agree with what you're saying. I wasn't trying to make out that there's some gap or transition period or anything like that. We are in the misery now. This is it.
Totally agree.
You know, next thing, socialism, that's where we're going to see the damage, the real damage. We know as members, we're aware of it.
Do you want to comment on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we do have the resources. I mean, if America... get involved in a war somewhere, they can build a base and prepare a thing for planes and to land in a comparatively short period of time. If we have to get lots of food into certain parts of the world where there is a shortage of people to start it, it can be done using the same resources. You could even use the same equipment to take off the guns and they can build they're using drones now to go kill people. You could use drones to take food to people. I mean, so the resources and the skills and the technology exists already. It's just it's been misused in present day society. Quite apart from the actual resources that go into wars and things. I mean, all that will probably it's a waste. It's a big waste. And people trained to kill other people and so on are taken out of useful production.
So anybody else who wants to speak as it's spoken? Anybody else spoken yet wants to speak?
The really difficult thing is getting the necessary majority. That's the painful thing. But once you've got that, then they already things will be changing. Plans will be made for how things will be done. Recently, you go to this firm that's name I can't remember, but they're giving up on the carbon capture to do with the coal mining because of the. Sorry, did you say?
Drugs.
Drugs, thank you. The firm is giving up on it, and that the government have never been very interested, whichever government it's been, has not been very interested in this carbon capture. I mean, a committee that was set up didn't get any help from the government at all, as I understand it. But there's these sort of things that show up what is needed to be done and how things. The environment being spoiled in many places because of the money aspect and how many billions this would cost. Well, the calculations that would be made would be about resources and needs and so on. But with cutting out that money thing, because money doesn't actually do anything, and it's human beings that do it, and we can apply to the natural resources. Money doesn't do anything. It just stands, it gets in the way. It looks as though it does things, but it doesn't. It's human beings that do things. So once you've got that, and you can just imagine the excitement and sort of rejuvenation of it with those ideas that this is what we can do with the world, that we don't have to have the amount of misery and whatever that's on. There's the possibilities there, the improvements that have been made in many ways that can't be fully utilised by the whole of humanity. that would be a miserable time. That would be a really a busy but exciting time.
But that's the point I was trying to make about money. People think that when we allocate in calculation in kind, what they want, it's something completely new. But in fact, it's not. You have to calculate in kind even under capitalism. What we're proposing is not substituting calculation in kind for calculation in money. It's sort of, it both happens today. We're just saying don't bother calculating in money. There's no need to. Just calculate correctly in kind. And just on that question of the carbon capture. It shows you cannot have a rational energy policy under capitalism. The reason why that these things have become unprofitable is for various reasons. The price of oil has gone down, and so it makes oil cheaper than than coal. And quite apart from that, so-called renewable energies or renewable energies as well, they're not cheaper than, I mean, they're more expensive than burning fossil fuels. So unless they can solve that problem, it's not going to happen. We'll find out, won't we? Next month there's a big conference in Paris, and we'll see what they don't decide. If all the other ones have been flops and failures, I imagine this one is going to be as well.
Just to say, like Conrad Glitz's comments, which I thought were both expensive and said in a short way, which is quite a thing to do. It's very good. It just reminded me of this about money, what was it good for, as well as the song goes, or was it? And my point is, I'm a big fan of Desert Island Discs. Sometimes I watch them, Channel 4X, because they've got ones of them involved. I've never heard anyone yet, when they're asked what they want to take out to the Desert Island, which is like music, no one ever says money. So, someone's got it right there, haven't they? Desert Island, no banks, nothing like that. What's the point of money? I'm not saying we should all create Desert Island, but what I'm saying is it's the concept of realising in certain situations you don't need any money.
Yeah, but in capitalism you need it.
Well, yeah, but that's not what we want to polish it, don't we?
Exactly.
I wanted to say that Britain will use lots of energy by using wind turbines, but the problem is that the producer should pay lots of rent due to land rent to the landowners. That's why it is not economic, due to land rent. Otherwise, wind energy is economic in Britain, and we can produce all the energy needed except for transport from wind can be produced. And we can even export energy due to having many islands as well to Western Europe.
In a country like Britain or this part of the world, the obvious form of renewable energy is wind. And tidal as well. The tidal barrages they could do, but people who vote conservative don't like it, do they? They object to their.
We do have quite a lot of coal, don't we? We do have quite a lot of coal in
them. Yeah. Well, if you're going to use coal, I mean, to mention Jeremy Corbyn, said we were talking about when he went to Wales, they accused him of saying he wanted to reopen the coal mines. I mean. Probably didn't do any harm down there, but it's not exactly what he said. He was saying what we would say. You would extract. If you're going to bring that coal, you'd have gasification of it underground. You wouldn't have sent people down to dig it up. So you can still use coal and oil for other things than burning. You can use it to make things you don't like, plastic. In fact, that's what they do use it for. so you can still rationally use fossil fuels for other things than the burning, but my view is that in a socialist society we'll have to use nuclear energy, because the thing about some of these, if you use solar energy and wind power, they only operate intermittently, but you still have to have a regular supply all the time, and that's one of the arguments that was used in favour under capitalism of using oil and coal. So I mean, it's a valid argument. You have to have a regular supply of electricity. I mean, you just think, what would it be like if we didn't have electricity? So, but one way of doing it without adding to global warming would be nuclear power. Ideally, nuclear fusion, but until we got that, in any event, we'll inherit all these nuclear power stations, and it costs as much to close them down as it costs as much you might as well use them and close them down slowly if you want to do that. But I would think that, anyway, that's just my personal opinion, what would be a rational energy policy in socialism, or at the beginning of socialism anyway.
Well, a very short point on that. You can also solve the storage problem. You can solve the storage problem, you can solve the fact that the timing of the production and the use is, and the storage problem is starting to be solved. So I think that's a counter or an alternative.
No, it hasn't happened. I mean, they haven't yet discovered an efficient system of storing electricity. So, I mean, if scientists and people would to deal with that problem rather than sending, well, I don't mind them sending rockets to Pluto as well. If we've got time.
They've brought that down. It's no longer a planet. Do you not keep
it's probably bigger than they thought it was. So it's going to be coming back on this.
Well, they've designed it. Okay.
I think the storage, the easiest storage method is to pump, when we have extra electricity, pump water
behind
the dam and then release it when we are in need of extra electricity.
They do that without electricity.
It's not possible. The only way now is this. But I think atoms are dangerous and you should resort to using sun energy by solar cells. Not in Britain is cloudy, but in other parts of the world, like for example Saudi Arabia, it's very sunny. It may have 5 hours more sun per day on average in each day.
There's an article on one of those pamphlets by Peter Lawrence, and he says you could do that. You could have sun over the Sahara Desert and Saudi Arabia, but you'd have to have a grid as well. You have to construct but presumably that's not beyond the our capabilities. I don't know. I mean, in Europe, everything's linked with a grid, isn't it? And they ship electricity back from France and Britain, and so on. You can do it. You know, but it would be a big, huge infrastructure project. Once it's done, it's done.
But sort of right into that, the price of oil would go down further, wouldn't it?
Well, they're keeping the price of oil down for political reasons, aren't they? They want to ruin
shale gas.
The other people. Yeah, with shale gas and Iran and things like that. So, I mean, it's an irrational decision in any event. It's not...
No more points? Perfect. Ready for a cup of tea and biscuits?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.